All right, welcome back to the Weekend Warrior Podcast, episode 10, July 5th, 2017. We're pretty excited today. We have our first guest ever, Artie Januario. So welcome to the pod, Artie.
Hi, folks.
And obviously, it's Pat Lane and Mike Langone with you as well. And we're here today. We're talk about Gordon Hayward, the big July 4th announcement, huge announcement for the Celtics. 2 years in a row signing the biggest free agent in the history of the Celtics.
Fireworks. Is that what Wick meant?
Fireworks. I think it is what Wick, yeah. I mean, hey, man, I'm cool with it. Then we have a little bit of Red Sox talk for you because they are in first place, in case you missed that. And we're going to have a nice little discussion here about the greatest comeback of all time compared from 04 with the Red Sox, obviously being down 3-0 last year with the Patriots. And that's going to lead us into our NFL preview. We're giving you 10, the bottom, we're going 32-1. So we're giving you 10 teams this week, 10 teams next week, and then we'll give you the last 12 over the last 2 weeks. So that should be pretty exciting. Bottom 10, there's really not much debate about number 32. But
I got a feeling number 1 isn't going to be that spicy of a topic.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So yeah. 32-1, they play in the same division, and there's no debate either way. So anyways, as always, you can hit us up on Weekend Warrior. Weekend War Pod is our Twitter handle. So that's WKNDWARPOD. So it's weekend with no E's. That's also our email address at gmail.com. So it's WKNDWARPOD at gmail.com. As always, shout out to MDOT for the intro and outro music. You can find him on Instagram and Twitter at MDOT Boston. He's also on Spotify, and his latest album, Ego and the Enemy, is on iTunes. So you can check him out. All right, here we go. All right, so as I said, fellas, Hayward yesterday, I'll tell you what, man. It was pretty freaking scary when they were like, they all reported it, and then it was like, yeah, the Hayward camp isn't happy now. They're reassessing everything. And I was like, Jesus Christ, the freaking Celtics blew it. They blew it. I was freaking out. Thank God he didn't actually, that wasn't actually the case. He actually was basically just writing his Players Tribune thing, which everyone kind of assumed that was the case.
Yeah. It was kind of like blowing out the birthday cake candles, and then like your mom being like, "Oh, I didn't have the camera on. We got to do it again."
Yeah,
it's not your birthday.
Yeah, it's not that fun.
Yeah, it was more.
I still get cake.
It was more relief. Yeah, the second time, like, thank God they didn't blow that.
Right.
And there were a few guys on Twitter. I think it was Adam Himmelsbach was like literally laid out the Players Tribune thing. Like, hours before it happened.
I saw that.
He was like, well, he's probably going to spend a long time thanking Utah, and then he's going to say everything was about Brad Stevens because then he can say it that way, and that's exactly the way it was written.
Right.
Someone came out at, like, 11:30 in the morning, hours before the first guy that reported it was
Chris Haynes.
Yeah. And, by the way, Chris Haynes had the greatest response tweet of all time, dude, with Chris with Hulk Hogan holding his hand up to his ear.
Yep.
But hours before he even reported it, another random dude on Twitter, so shout out to random dude on Twitter, I don't even know who you are, but we'll hit you up on Twitter, don't worry about it. Actually, we already did shout him out on Twitter, so we're good. At like 11:30 in the morning, he was like, Hayward's working on a Players Tribune article, and it's entitled, Thank You, Utah.
Yeah.
And I was like, at 11:30, hours before it had been announced at all, and of course it comes out, and the title is Thank You, Utah. So... maybe he was just guessing. I don't know. But, I mean, holy shit, dude. He fucking nailed that, you know?
Yeah. Now, I wonder how many times in an article he, you know, highlighted Boston, deleted it, and put Utah, and, like, vice versa. It sounds like he was sitting in his bed, like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to announce it.
It does sound like that, but at the same time, man, I think he was Celtics all the way. I really do.
I think 4 years he's been Celtics all the way. Ever since Brad Stevens was hired. Yeah.
Well, dude, I had a big Stevens in my pants, dude, when he was like, he was sitting there like, you know, the biggest decision of my life was whether I was going to go back to school or not. And the one guy that was there for me, giving me solid advice, was Brad Stevens. And now I was at the crossroads where I had another big decision, and there he was again. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, this is it. Like, that's why he's here. And, you know, what everyone thought at the end of the year, really towards the middle of the year, ended up happening, which is they had a great relationship together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it shows you the type of guy that Stevens is,
yeah.
right? I don't think Rick Pitino is guaranteed one of his players just because, you know? And, yeah. and but, you know, Stevens builds that relationship with his players. He, you know, and he maybe has that relationship with other players more than, you know, some players more than others. But clearly he built it up with Hayward, and I really think he was being genuine, where a big factor in his decision was Brad Stevens.
Yeah. And it almost had to be. I mean, he left, what was it, $44 million on the table yeah. to come to Boston?
Yeah.
I mean, if he stayed in Utah, it's clearly for the money, because they're not getting out of the bloodbath of the West.
They're a decent team. They're just in a really bad conference.
Right. If they're in the East, they're probably the third best team or the fourth yeah. best team,
yes.
you know.
Yes.
But in the West, they're ninth or tenth.
Oh, it's not even.
Especially now, forget it.
I mean, maybe they make the play. They probably make the playoffs in the West, and then they get the crap kicked out of them in the first
yeah,
round. Because, you know, there's no way. And people can say whatever they want about him taking the easy way out or any of that crap. He's still got to play the teams he's got to play.
Yes.
It's not like he's going to, you know, taking the easy way out was, you could say that about Kevin Durant
yes.
because
yeah.
he played against
right.
the Warriors and then switched teams to play with the Warriors. Like, that's not with Hayward. Hayward just, he switched conferences to play with his old coach. Like, and even if you want to say he chose the Eastern Conference because it's easier, well, fine. He's not a fucking idiot. Like, you know, it's just like, whatever, you know? Like, that's fine.
He's in a good situation, obviously. But, I mean, you have, like, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, you all the young guys, and you have picks next year.
Two lottery
right.
picks.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, and he's 27.
He's 27.
Yeah. Right, and so he can see them through this period now and then still be there when these guys
yes.
become superstars.
Yeah.
Hopefully that happens, obviously,
yeah.
you know, and if that happens, then he can still be there.
Yeah. I'm just excited. He's so smooth on offense, but his defense get discounted a lot.
Right.
He's defended Kevin Durant really well. He's defended LeBron pretty well in the past. He's not a top 10 truly elite guy, but he's the type of guy you need on your team to win a championship.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, he's exactly what the Celtics needed, outside of, obviously, everybody wants him to get the big goof rebounder. But, I mean, I think Danny's shown that over the last 3 or 4 years, that's not a huge priority for his system. So I don't think they're going to go head over heels to try and get one of those guys. I think Stevens literally built his system around Hayward. So he's just the perfect guy for this team.
Yeah. He got his guy, and I think Danny's going to get his guy in Okafor.
Yeah. yeah.
It's possible, yeah. I mean, they have to move money around somewhere.
Yeah.
They're going to have to trade some pieces.
I mean, they have to sign Gordon.
Right, So they got to get under the cap. For those of you that don't know how the salary cap in the NBA works, it's kind of complicated. You have the salary cap, which
it's
doesn't...
way more complicated than it should be.
It
yes.
really is, right?
Seriously.
You have the salary cap, which doesn't really matter. The only way the salary cap matters is that you have to be under it to sign a free agent.
Yeah.
But after you've signed that guy, if they're all on your team... Mm-hmm. or you're trading for someone, the salary cap is irrelevant, doesn't matter.
Right.
The only thing that has to happen is that the salaries have to be close if you're both over the salary cap. But then there's a luxury tax threshold
mm-hmm.
where if you go over that, you get taxed like $3 per dollar.
Yeah.
It's like ridiculous.
Which the owners want no part of.
And
so
that's the thing,
where
right?
they gotta get under.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so they got to try to stay under that. So what they have to do is move some money around now to be able to get Hayward under the salary cap. And then next year, they're going to probably max IT, I would think. Maybe they'll have to move some money around to try to make that work. But if they can figure that out and they have the core of IT, Hayward, Horford, Brown, and Tatum, and then they're going to have to move on from guys like Bradley and Smart and people
right.
like that. But they're still going to be able to do it, I think.
But is it if they – I don't know if Isaiah has the bird years. You know, the bird years where you play 3 years or something with a team and then you can re-sign and it doesn't really hit the cap or
– right. Yeah, you might have that too. That's a possibility as well. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it's gonna be interesting how the math works out. The freaking NBA cap, it gives you, as Felger would say, a popsicle headache. It's just stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are guys on Twitter to follow for that, and we're not one of them. So don't look at us. But but you know, suffice it to say, right now this offseason they have to move money around. We're assuming they're not just gonna trade pieces for nothing. They have some valuable pieces. So look for something coming back. I'd love it to be a guy like Porzingis. I don't know if that's going to happen. I want no part of Marc Gasol. Too expensive, too many years, too old, don't need it. You know, you can find a goon rebounder from someone else. Maybe his brother, like you were saying earlier today already.
I mean,
so.
He probably goes back to San Antonio. It's a good situation for him, but
right.
I don't know. Somebody like him, you know what I mean? Tail end of his career type of thing.
Right.
Doesn't have to do much.
So we'll see. But anyways, you'll see that happening in the next few days, but that Hayward signing was huge. And again, 2 years in a row, the biggest signing in the history of the Celtics organization. Can't be stressed enough. I mean, what they're doing in Boston right now is unbelievable. The big three, the old big three that happened, they were all acquired by trades, right? Trades and drafting, even with the, going back to the Bird one, trades and drafting, right? And the same thing here, you know, with the Garnett one, it was KG was a trade, Ray Allen was a trade, Pierce they obviously drafted. So now you're talking about IT was a trade, but Horford and Hayward, back-to-back years, the biggest free agent in the history of the Celtics, unbelievable.
I thought no one wanted to play here, right?
Hey, that's what they said. That's what they said. But anyways. All right, so let's move on to the Red Sox. We've really kind of neglected the Red Sox, and I apologize, Red Sox fans, but we've neglected you because you're just boring. And now, all of a sudden, you're not so boring.
Yeah.
They're killing it. They've won six straight. They're up 4.5 games going into the game tonight because the Yankees lost again today. And right now, they are guaranteed to finish with at least a share of the lead by the All-Star break, which is pretty unbelievable.
Awesome.
So they could lose every game.
Where
Yankees could win every game.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty unbelievable. I want to throw a few stats at you from Boston Sports Info, which is a great follow on Twitter. If those of you that don't follow them on Twitter. AL team starting pitching. Okay, the percentage of starting pitchers that have gone five innings or more. So the Red Sox are second in the league at 85.4%. Pretty high numbers there, okay? So you started to look at starting pitching. I thought pitching was a problem for a while, and now all of a sudden it's not.
Yeah. The depth was definitely a problem for a little bit.
Yes.
Even the bullpen's getting a little bit better, but Kimbrel gave up that home run the other night to Napoli.
Yeah.
He did. Well, how about, speaking of the bullpen, how about Heath Embry? Last 20 appearances, 20.1 innings pitched, 20 and a third innings pitched, 2.66 ERA, 1.08 whip, 2 walks, 21 strikeouts.
Wow.
So Hembry's been lights out.
Talk about consistency.
Exactly. And Kimbrel's been killing it. And so, you know, the bullpen's really been coming through. The starting pitch has been coming through. This team, if Price and Porcello can get their shit together, this team is going to be tough to beat
even
down the stretch.
I mean, the way that Pomeranz is pitching, even if one of them comes through,
that's true.
You get three guys for a playoff rotation. That's really all you need.
It's a really good point.
Know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much we can count on Price in the playoffs, but...
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I mean...
Yeah. And if you
it's
got
to turn at some point.
Right.
It's
true. It is true.
Literally, law of averages, he has to win
you
a
would
playoff
think.
Game.
That is true.
At some point in his life.
At some point. Well, he has won a playoff game, but not as a starter.
As a... Yeah. As a reliever. Right.
You can imagine, like... People throw that one at him, and then he'll be quick to throw it at you,
I'm
too.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, David Price.
He'll win one when he's with the Dodgers.
the Cardinals.
Yeah.
We trade him to the Dodgers for, like, 17 different things.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Lord. And then, I mean, so we'll see what happens. I mean, but the Red Sox, for now, their hitting was struggling for a while. They've started to come around. Benintendi's been killing the ball. Mookie Betts is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, their young core guys are mashing, and Hanley literally just flipped a switch. It's like the media came at him one day and was like, "You haven't been hitting lefties," and he's like, "Oh, I haven't been hitting lefties. All right, I'm gonna go hit lefties." And he just
he's such a prima donna that he needs, you know, some dork of a reporter being like, "You can't hit lefties." Oh yeah, you know what I mean?
He's
like,
so true, dude. He really was like, the transcript is hysterical because they were like, "Hanley, you haven't been doing well against lefties." He's like, "Really? I haven't?"
Yeah.
And they're like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Well, what are the numbers on that? It can't be that bad." And like, you're hitting like one something. And he's like, "What? Really? Oh, I'm going to turn that around." And he just started hitting. It was like, what the hell, dude?
Hanley being Hanley, right?
So, but interesting stuff there. Oh, also, one last stat from Boston Sports Info. By the way, for those of you interested, it's at Boston Sports Info. With no O at the end. So it's Boston Sports Info, but no O. Why not an O? I don't know. Ask him. I have no idea. But either way, last 15 games, obviously, before tonight, 93 innings pitched. This is their starters, the last 15 games. 93 innings pitched, 2.9 ERA, 1.08 whip, 22 walks, 97 strikeouts, more than a strikeout an inning. This is just for the starters.
Yeah.
So they're killing it. Their starting pitching's really been killing it, and that's really come around, and it's really turning them around. So yeah. So we'll see what happens, but that's going to be interesting to see. And the Red Sox are giving us baseball through the summer. Like, at least we have something through the summer to look forward to.
The freak show that was 2012?
That was just a nightmare. I mean, you know, they've gone back and forth, but they got us, they're going to get us somewhere, so we appreciate that. So anyways, all right, so listen, we'll talk some Red Sox. We're going to transition from Red Sox to NFL, and to do that, we're going to have this kind of interesting discussion here about the greatest comeback of all time between the 04 Red Sox down 3-0 to the 2016 Patriots down 28-3 in the third quarter in the Super Bowl. So, really kind of...
We can even have this argument.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Oh, it is nice.
You know
it's
what I
fantastic.
Mean? It's fantastic. Yep. You can't take it for granted.
No,
it's
and there's
an amazing thing.
Well, and that's the thing, is that there's nothing... You can look at it a million different ways, but at the end of the day, you look at it and you say, unequivocally, Boston has the two greatest comebacks of all time. It's really not close.
Right.
I mean, no one else has done what these... And I know people have come back from 3-0 before, but no one has come back from 3-0 like the Red Sox came back from 3-0.
Right.
I mean, 86 years against the Yankees that have always given them problems. They lost the Yankees in 0-3 in the ALCS. Like, they were losing in the bottom of the ninth, for Christ's sake, and they came back and won. So, you know, you look at that one, and that's unbelievable. And then the NFL one is just, it's not even close. There's nothing else that's even close to
it. That's better than Buffalo in 93.
100%, because the Buffalo game... Well,
a wild card game, I know.
It was a wild card game,
but
it also flipped before the fourth quarter.
What?
No team had ever been up 19 points in the fourth quarter and lost. And so you're right, they were down 25, but they came back.
No, I don't think it's better, I'm just saying.
No. I'm with you. I'm not like, don't worry, but I'm just saying, like, I just think it turned faster. You see what I'm saying? Like, because it was an unbelievable turn of events. I mean, they were getting the shit kicked out of them, and then Frank Reich, their backup quarterback, led this ridiculously improbable victory. Right? It's unbelievable, but it's just not the Super Bowl.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then, especially even in the fourth quarter, down 19-plus in the fourth quarter, it's just like, get the hell out of here.
Yeah,
team
was what, 93-0
at that point? 93-0 at that point, yep. Wow. 93-1 now, but 93-0. It's pretty ridiculous. So, I don't know. Anyone want to start? Anyone want to make an argument one way or the other?
I'm going Red Sox, just because, well, on a significance level, it's totally more significant. I mean, 86 years against the Yankees, that was our World Series. If we had lost the World Series, it'd still be the greatest comeback ever.
It's true.
But, yeah, just the way it worked out with everything. Some weird shit happened with Pedro coming in the eighth inning in game 7 when he didn't have to. And yeah, I'm going to take that, not to take anything away from the Patriots one, but... You know, that's their fifth Super Bowl. This is, you know, but the comeback itself, I don't know, three games instead of two quarters.
Four games,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's an argument for both. The Patriots, it's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. It had never been done. They had to cross the goal line 5 times within 19 minutes. That alone is ridiculous. You know, because you forget they had to go for two twice.
Yeah.
Because Ghost missed the extra point for the first touchdown, which could have sank any team.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And it's funny, too. I was, of course, I've rewatched this game God knows how many times. It's been on twice in the past 2 days.
As everyone has.
Yeah, of course. But probably my two biggest plays of the game that, I mean, there's so many that you could argue are the biggest plays of the game, whatever. The Blunt fumble. So Blunt had 9 carries into the middle of the second quarter at that point, and he got 8 snaps the rest of the game after that fumble. It turned into a James White game.
Yep.
And I think that changed everything.
Yeah.
Then it was about 6 minutes left in the third quarter. It was a 4th-and-3. It was after the Edelman pass, the double pass.
Yes, to
Dion,
Amendola.
To Dion.
Well, right. And then this pass is to Amendola.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yes. 4th and 3. Amendola runs an 8-yard out and ends up gaining 17 yards. If they don't get that, the Falcons take over at the 46 and game's over.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
I mean, there's so many plays like that that you talk about.
Well, you can hear Matt Ryan up 25 points on the sideline going, this is a big play. This is a big play.
Right? Yep.
And it's like, Matt Ryan, you're up 25 in the Super Bowl, buddy.
Right.
Like, we know it's a big play, but, right. like, aren't you a little confident? Like, yeah. what the hell? You know what I mean?
Now, I think the Patriots got a little more help. I know me and you have talked about it.
Yeah.
I think the second half play calling by Atlanta was absolutely atrocious. They were still throwing with 7 minutes left. They were up by, 16. And they're whipping the ball all over the field. And, they take 2 sacks. One of them to take them out of field goal range, which, again, would have ended the game.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Quinn, he comes from the Pete Carroll coaching tree, so it should be no surprise, that he wants to...
Well, we were even talking about,
unzip his pants and show how big it is,
Well, and, you were right. I mean, the second half play calling was just, dreadful. I mean, because remember, the Patriots score that touchdown, they miss the extra point, then they kick an onside kick, and they don't get it.
Right. Which, it almost worked. Gostkowski took out 2 guys, just wiped them out.
I know.
But it just bounced off his leg. Yeah. I know. But Gostkowski did a great job there.
Yeah. It's just bad luck that it hit his leg, But so the Falcons get the ball, and then it was the opposite sequence of what happened after the Julio catch, where they took a holding penalty, and then they allowed a sack, and the sack was on the other side of the 50, I think, at that point. But I mean, they literally had to pick up, 7 yards,
because
there was a penalty on Gostkowski as well, so it pushed them up another 5 yards. So they just had to pick up, 10 yards and kick a field goal, and they're up by, 22 again. So it just... Man, every mistake after mistake at them, and it's just like, stop throwing the freaking ball and run it. Like, understand.
Didn't you learn? Didn't Quinn learn?
Well, I mean, the thing is, right, and I don't remember, I was talking to one of you, I don't even remember who it was about this, but that their decision to throw was worse than
that was me.
Seattle's decision
1,000%
to throw on the goal line, right?
That.
Because it's one play on the goal line, and we talked about this already in our historical inaccuracies about how... it wasn't really the play call. I mean, it wasn't really the play. It was the clock management before that play, which sucked. And it did, but that's one drive.
Yeah.
You're talking about the whole second half. Yeah. Like, the whole second half. Yeah. And
even with 5 minutes left, if they figured it out.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Julio makes that catch. If they just run it 3 times, they could have fucking taken a knee 3 times and won the game.
Right.
And instead...
Have Ryan run around in the backfield.
Right. Just and instead, they're going to just... They take a sack, then they get a holding penalty, and see you later. So, it's just, if I were a Falcons fan, I would never recover. Never. And as a Patriots fan,
no
I mean, 10 years later, as a Patriots fan, I still haven't recovered from the 07 loss. I've recovered a little bit, because we've won 2 more now. Mm-hmm. But even still, anytime I think about that game, it gives me, I get,
once in a while, migraine. I'll do, a drive-by, corner of my eye on the catch. I'm like, okay, right, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
It's okay, we got one.
Right,
okay.
Right.
But, yeah, that was...
It's just bad. I mean, there's nothing you could do. And look, the helmet catch was fluky.
Yes.
And it's one of the greatest plays in the history of the NFL. And so you say, okay, it's one of the greatest plays ever. And maybe the Falcons can look at the Edelman play like that, but the Edelman play was on first down, it really wasn't, I mean, as big of a play as it was, it wasn't the deciding turning factor of the game. Right. And so, and that's the thing is that if he doesn't make that helmet catch, the game's over.
Right.
I mean, it's 4th and 15 or something like that, or 4th and 12 or something, and the game's probably over if they don't pick up the next. So, you can look at it as a Patriots fan and say it's the greatest play of all time, it's a fluke play, whatever. And the Edelman play is going to be replayed over and over and over again, trust me. But, as a Patriots fan, I can look at that and say, well, yeah, the Edelman catch was great, but there's 10 other plays that were bigger than that play.
There was one back near the Patriots coming out of their own end zone, and Brady had what? This is such try to visualize this, people, I promise. Brady had White behind him to the right. He had Hogan to his right and a Twins right. So Hogan's going on a streak, and White is going to run a delayed wheel route. Safety blitzes. White comes off his route a little bit, I'm talking half a step, and just pushes the safety out of the way. If he doesn't do that, Brady gets a safety. Game is over. It's just one, and but he connects with Hogan for a 27-yard pass, and they're out of the end zone, and they're marching.
Right.
Just little things like that were so amazing. But, I mean, back to the coaching and the play calling, you know me and Pat talked about this. The Falcons were gassed. In the third quarter, you could see it in their faces. They were done. And to me, that's coaching. That's you're not ready for the long halftime. You're not ready for when the adrenaline wears off. You got to get by on skill and your game plan and execution. You can't take your foot off the gas for a second. And they did, and the Patriots went for the jugular, and they got it.
You could see how worried they were, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. As soon as the Patriots came within two scores,
that was over. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, the strip sack on Ryan. And what's interesting is that the play before the strip sack, Tevin Coleman gets hurt, and Tevin Coleman is the better pass blocker.
Yes, right.
And you could see on that play, if you watch that play again, Freeman looks inside. And it's not that Freeman wasn't supposed to block that play. He was.
He looked
inside instead of looking outside to Hightower. So when he turns, and you can see him like turn and realize like Hightower is in his face, and Hightower just swam him real quick and tackled and sacked Ryan. But if he looks outside instead, Hightower's blocked and nothing happens. But because he looks inside and doesn't realize that Hightower's coming off the edge, Hightower gets a strip sack, and then here we go. And, you know, the rest is history. I mean, it's really unbelievable. I think the Red Sox, what they did in 2004 was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It's unmatched. And I think what Mike said historically,
The World Series formality.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Nobody was beating them after that.
You know what's funny? Twitter, if Twitter had happened back in the day, by the way, if there was Twitter back in the day, I would have scooped everybody. going to bed that night after they got the shit kicked out of them in Game 3. I mean, they got absolutely demoralized in Game 3.
Yeah.
And you figured the season's over, right? I'm going to bed, and I said to my roommate at the time, I was a junior in college, I'm like, it's all right. Don't worry about it. They're going to win 8 in a row and win the World Series. I swear to God, I said, and he'll tell you, I said that to him as I was going to bed. Now, clearly, I was joking, obviously, because like they just got the crap together out of him, but they won 8 in a row and won the World Series. And I was like, dude, if I had posted that online, like, I would have...
Like, lived on forever.
Right? You know what I mean? So, unfortunately,
that's the greatest hot take of all
one
time.
Guy can back that up, and everyone's like, yeah, sure. Yeah, okay, yep. But you were going to say something, my guy, cut
the
you up.
The Game 4 when they had... they were down, 3-2, and they had Rivera.
Yeah,
Mariano.
Greatest
closer of all time. Millar has a great at-bat, Miller had the great at-bat.
He blew back-to-back saves, right? Didn't he blow Game 5 as well? Didn't they come back?
They came back in that game, but
was that Game 6 did they come back in?
No, it was Game 5.
Game 5 was in, right.
I think Game 5 is a better game than Game 4.
Yeah,
Game 4 has the moments, but like a back-and-forth game. Game 5 was unbelievable.
Tim Wakefield pitching to Veritek.
Yep.
Oh, it's just...
That's always a circus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I kind of, you know, as much as I, you know, I love the Patriots and I watch that Super Bowl as much as I can, I do lean Red Sox. If anything, like we were saying, it's 4 games instead of 1.
Right.
I think the competition was so much tougher on the other side.
Yeah, that's
true,
too.
The Falcons, their offense is unbelievable, obviously. They have arguably the best quarterback-receiver tandem in the NFL. But that defense blows. It does.
Right.
I mean, last year, their points for, they were 27th. Yards against, they were 25th. So that's a bottom-feeding defense.
Right. For sure.
And the Patriots, I mean, they controlled time of possession. They ran 99 plays on that team.
Yeah.
To, I think, 49 by the Falcons. You know, I think they were, if you put those teams on paper 100 times, the Patriots probably win 90.
Right.
I really think that. And that, you know, the Yankees were the Yankees. I mean, they were the best team in the league that
year.
They
just got A-Rod.
I mean, we were rolling out Bronson Arroyo, and you know, God love him.
It was
his cornrows and his curveball.
The last member of that team still playing.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
Bronson Arroyo.
But you know, I think the the competition was a little bit better. I think there was, like Mike said, there was more pressure on the Red Sox after, especially after 2003, and with, you know, the quote-unquote the curse and the amount of talent they had put together with Ortiz and Manny and Damon and Trotnick.
They had just gotten Schilling that year,
Schilling, yep.
And the bloody sock. Right. Even if it wasn't real blood.
Well, right. You know, you can. Yeah, you know. It was close. Yeah. It might have been. May not. Maybe not. But we're going to go with yes.
Yeah, we'll say it's fake. We'll
but,
it's real.
You know, look, for me personally, this is the only thing for me. And I understand the Red Sox. I understand the points. I'm going to make the case for the Patriots, even if it's not enough. I'm going to make the case for the Patriots. It had never happened, ever.
Yeah.
And I know that 3-0 had never happened either. But this is, we're talking about the biggest comeback in the history of the sport. And it, and again, it's really not, I mean, 19 points
and
in the fourth quarter.
It's for the championship.
And here's the thing, right? In the championship game, 2 years earlier against the Seahawks, the Patriots had the greatest comeback in the history of the Super Bowl, down 10 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, down by 10.
And then 2 years later, they're down 19, almost double the points they were down. And like you said, Artie, they had to cross the goal line five times.
Yeah.
And then also kick a field goal. So you got to cross the goal line five times and kick a field goal just to tie the game to get it into overtime and then win it in overtime. And so, you know, I did some research here. And so just out of curiosity, I looked at the last 5 years, two-point conversions, because I talked to my father about this a lot, and after Gostkowski missed the extra point, they're down 19.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, they go in the fourth quarter, they're down 19, and I'm just thinking, all I can think of is Denver in 2015. So all I can think of, Denver in the AFC Championship game, Gostkowski had missed a field goal, an extra point, I'm sorry. They were down 8 instead of down 7.
Yeah, that almost ended that game.
Right. And they score a touchdown late, but they didn't get the two-point conversion. And all I can think of is they're going to score the two touchdowns, but they're going to miss one of the two-point conversions. That's all I can think of is that that's going to screw them, okay? Just out of curiosity, I took a look, and I just said, okay, let's just take a look at the last 5 years. Now, the last 5 years is 32 teams, so it's 160 seasons. Seasons here. 16 games. Per team, 16 games per season, so 160 seasons, team seasons, times 16, okay? Mm-hmm. Out of that entire time, 98 teams attempted more than two-point conversions in a season. 98 times. So just 98 teams, that's it.
They do it in a game.
Out of those 98 teams, 47 got two or more. That's 29.4%. So it's about 30% of the teams in total got two or more. So what I'm saying here is that 30% of the teams of the seasons, there were more than two two-point conversions for the entire season. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So 47 out of 160, basically. Right. Okay. Out of the 98 that had been attempted more than twice, okay, 11 were 100%. That's 11%, okay, because 98 is basically 100. It's like 11.2% or something like that, right? So that means 11% of the people in an entire season that have attempted two or more were 100%. Now, the Patriots, in one game, had to get two in the same game and go 100%.
Yeah.
It just, the chances of that happening were so slim. I mean, you never see it. You know, I couldn't even remember the last time. And the Steelers attempted something like 15 a few years back or something like that when they had no kicker. They would just go for two almost every other time, right? Yeah, so they attempted all the time. And they were like 8 out of 15 or something like that.
I think that's when they changed the rule.
Right.
The 35-yard
line. Yes.
Kick, I should say.
And so, you know, it's one of those things you just start looking at it and you say, okay, what are the odds that's actually going to happen? Right. You know? I mean, forget about... Now, that's not even forgetting about scoring a touchdown. I mean, think about this. Right, and again, from a mathematical standpoint, there was a 0.2% chance the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl down 28 points, down 25. 0.2%. That percentage didn't change at all until the Hightower strip sack. Think about that, dude. They scored two.
They scored twice.
They scored twice, and the percentage didn't change until the Hightower strip sack. So you talk about the comeback being improbable, it's like, they had less than a 1% chance until they had the ball at the 40-yard line down 16 points. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and even then at that point, and look, someone said, do the math out, okay? Let's say there's a 50% chance that you score a touchdown and then a 50% chance to get a two-point conversion, which isn't actually the case, but let's just say it's the case. So it's one half times one half for that, times another one half for the touchdown, times another one half. So that's 2 to the 4th power, which is 16. So now we're it's 1/16th chance that they're going to win.
Right.
That's already under 10%. So you're looking at it saying, even if you give the Patriots a 50% chance to score a touch to score each touchdown, and then a 50% chance to get each 2-point conversion, you're still at 1/16th of a percent, or 1/16th. So you look at it and just say, mathematically,
statistically, it's so
unlikely to happen. And look, winning 4 games in a row is unbelievably hard, and I get that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like,
the thing about the Patriots too is you're up against the clock.
Right.
Baseball, you have all the time in the world.
Right.
You have the clock breathing down your neck in football.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the crowd's pumping in, and you know, it's just it's really amazing what they did in such a short amount of time.
Only they could do that, too.
Right, they can just... Right.
No other team could have done that.
Yeah, and like I was saying to Pat, I mean, there's instances, too, where, you know, they ran the ball with Blunt from about the 15, and there's like 6 minutes left, and I'm screaming for them to throw the ball.
But yeah.
I don't realize in my head that they know they're going to go in and score. They were that confident.
Right.
You know, Brady, there was about 3 minutes left. It was on the last drive, and there's a play where it was before the last touchdown. Actually, he's at the line and he takes about 20 seconds just to make sure the defense, he's reading it right and he's got his guys set up. You know, even Joe Buck is like, you know, they're not showing much urgency here, but you know, he's that confident in the team and in the game plan and in his guys to be in the right spot that he was like, all right, let's just run the offense.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. And it's I don't take it for granted because it's just so amazing to see.
I mean, you'll never see another team.
And I love, too, I mean, speaking of 2-point conversions, didn't it make your little, like, Patriots heart a flutter when they ran the Kevin Falk direct snap
wasn't
play?
That cool?
You know what I mean?
Well, you know what's funny is my dad said to me they were 100% going to run this play.
Yeah.
And he's like, then they came on empty backfield, and I was like, and he's like, maybe they won't run it. And then White shifted in the backfield and like, oh, here it comes.
Yep.
And we knew it was coming, and I knew it was coming. I'm like, they're going to do it. And they still, and they did it, and it worked. It's like, it works every freaking time. You know, it's just like, it's great, you know. But it, yeah, that one was a lot of fun. And Edelman, I mean, you think about it, right? Edelman, if they played hockey rules, okay, where the ball has to cross the plane, like cross the plane, Edelman doesn't score the 2-point conversion, and James White doesn't score the final touchdown.
Nope.
So that's how close they were to not winning. And so you just look at it and say, like you said, where they're up against the clock, there's so many things against them. They basically had to turn the game around in a split second.
Yeah.
The entire game turned. Mm-hmm. Whereas in 04, you say, okay, the Red Sox have the great comeback in game 4, which is great, but it's one game.
Yeah.
Then they play a great game in game 5. Now they're down 3-2, but they go back to New York, but it's like, hey, momentum's on our side.
Well, yeah, it's a momentum thing, and it's also different. You have, you know, different starting pitchers every game.
Right.
Yeah.
Schilling comes out in game 6 with a bloody sock, and you're like, holy
and
shit.
Yankees,
you know,
blew that because they didn't bunt the whole time.
Right, which is what I would have done. Absolutely.
One
right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, it's one of those things. Now, look, I think the argument can be made either way. I think you guys are probably right. I think it's probably the 04 Red Sox. But I think...
You just can't let the Patriots...
I can't do it. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't like the Patriots being second to anything.
You've been talking for 2 hours about the Patriots are the greatest comeback ever.
But, I mean, I'm not stuck in cement either way. I mean, they're both so incredible. I guess... Yeah, I mean, I still think I lean Red Sox... Just like I said, I think 4 games over 1 against that type of competition is what pushes
in
me
Yankee
that
Stadium
way.
And,
in Yankee Stadium,
you know, right.
Right, right.
In,
I mean,
hostile
6
territory.
And 7, right, was, you know, on their lawn.
And even game 6, too, that ended with Tony Clark striking out with 2 on.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, I mean...
It was close. I mean...
He ruined the Red Sox season before. And,
yeah.
Well, like 0-1 or 0-2, but...
Right.
Yeah, he could have ruined that one.
They almost did in that series, too, with the ground rule double in game 4.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think at the end of the day, I'm going to have to agree with you guys about 04, only because I think the historical thing just comes into play too much for me. You know, I know historically 16 was Brady's 5th and everything like that, and it was kind of the, you know, deflate gate thing and blah, blah. But, like, at the end of the day, it's like that's not as significant as breaking an 86-year curse and people crying in the stands because they had never seen the Red Sox win a World Series. You know, it's like
it's also the only time that that's happened in baseball.
Right,
the team came back from 3-0. Right. I mean, teams have come back from 25 points. You know, not in the Super Bowl, but
right, but they've done it.
Yeah,
right. Whereas no one's ever done that before.
Plus, I mean, you know, if the Sox lose that series, if they get swept, I mean, where does that team go? Do they blow up? Do they?
Yeah,
you know
yeah
what I mean?
Probably.
Whereas if the Patriots, I mean, they were on the road getting smoked by the Falcons. If they did, they just reload and they're already Super Bowl favorites for this year.
Yeah, it wouldn't be any different.
Right.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, that one series changed. It changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it changed everything about the way Red Sox fans look at the world.
Yeah.
And really, I think it changed everything about the way Boston fans look at the world. I mean, the Patriots won in 01, 03, and 04. And I think that the Red Sox still had a bigger impact than those three championships. To me, look, to me, I'm a bigger Patriots fan than I am Red Sox fan. I'm not going to lie to you. 01, to me, was more significant than 04 for me, personally, because I got made fun of for wearing Patriots stuff in middle school. Like, I just did. That was the way it was.
Yeah,
I was a fan when no one else was. But at the end of the day, it was like 04 for the region was more significant because there were people that lived their whole lives that never saw the Red Sox win a World Series. And you get the Babe Ruth thing, and you get the this, and you get that, and you get 75, and you get, you know, all these years. So it's just one of those things, you know, 86. I mean, let's, you know, we'll not drag that up again. But the whole thing, the point is that it's more significant for this area that 04 happened than 16 happened. So
you're saying the comeback itself, not as good? Like the comeback itself,
but the
like
ramifications
on paper?
Of it.
Yeah, maybe the comeback on paper not as good, but the ramifications. Oh, that's a good, well put. So the Patriots still end up there. Nice job. I'm going with that.
So we'll let you pick the Patriots. It's fine.
Okay. Oh, thank you. I can't pick against the Patriots. It's just what you know.
Well, they also had like Goodell was like their Yankees.
That's true.
So,
good point.
I don't know why I'm giving you that.
I don't know why you're doing that. I think you're coming to my side now.
Yeah. That's true. That did exercise that demon, you know.
That's true.
1.5 year demon of
that fucking guy.
Deflategate and all that jazz.
Fun fact, my fun fact of the week, both comebacks called by Joe Buck.
Oh, you're right, dude. Look at you.
True.
Good old Joe Buck. You're welcome
only
here
one
anytime.
One had
but
Tim McCarver, though.
That's a good point.
Thankfully,
yeah. Thankfully yeah. Yes. I feel like Tim McGarrett would have really lost the Super Bowl. More so than more so than who called it with Madden. No, with Madden in the first one.
Summerall. Yeah.
But Pat Summerall was like, oh, you know, Vinatieri missed a few in warm ups and he's drilling. He drills like three straight in the video. I'm like, this guy, like
to the 20, to the 10, to the 5.
He had just done
he was the best, though. I love John Pat.
He was great.
Oh, God, Pat was like a weirdo.
So, but anyway, to clarify, that's not this Pat. That was Pat Summerall he was talking about, in case you're wondering.
Yes.
Right. Just want to clarify that.
Pat Lane did not call some
not a weirdo. Oh, maybe you could say, but nevertheless. All right, so let's move into the NFL. I said we're going from 32 to 1. So we're starting at the bottom, and I mean, there's really no bottom further than the Jets, which just makes my heart sing to see the Jets so terrible. And
granted, they're doing it on purpose.
They are.
Yeah,
it kind of makes it less fun that they want to be terrible. But
I wish Sam Darnold had a catchy name like Luck, so you could say.
Yeah, suck for luck, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
But, I mean, they don't.
Yeah,
they
no,
don't.
They don't, and that's and it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, it got to the point where it's just like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
how do they do that? They're like a borderline playoff team every few years, and then they just suck.
Yeah,
blow it up. Mm. Well, I mean, they were a borderline playoff team with Ryan Fitzpatrick as their quarterback.
Right.
So, I mean, like
who Vince Young hates apparently.
Yeah, well, I mean, Vince Young. We already talked about this. Vince Young, a cup of the CFL. I mean,
yes.
Jesus Christ,
yeah,
Vince Young.
Exactly.
CFL is high competition.
Very true. Very true. Coming up in the Warrior one to watch. We would have almost spoke about that one yet. Though.
Yeah.
All right. So Jets last, as you said to me already earlier this week, possibly the worst roster in NFL history.
It's up there.
Which, when you think about the fact that, you know, guys back in like the 40s had like, you know, part-time jobs while they were playing in the NFL, it's saying a lot, you know, but it could be. It could, competition-wise at least. you look around the league and you look at them, I mean, they could conceivably go 0-16. Mm. And the Lions needed some help to go 0-16. I don't think the Jets need much help. They just need the other team to show up, and they could lose every game easily. Yeah.
It's across the board. We're all Jets.
All Jets across the board. This one, for me, it looks like we're a little mixed on this one. I have the Bears second to last. Really, my reasoning for the Bears is that they're just not good. They weren't good to begin with. Mm. And then they paid big money to Mike Glennon, and then they traded a shitload to move up to second to draft his replacement. Like, that's just a fucking disaster waiting to happen.
Right there,
like,
you know?
It's just like...
I mean, I have the Bears as my fourth worst. The only thing I think the Bears have going for them is they actually have a decent front seven.
Right.
And their offensive line is one of the best in football, scarily. I mean, if you look at the stats, you know, they got Howard as the running back.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
So,
he could just not throw it, right?
Right.
Just
run it.
That's true. It's possible.
He can lean on him for a little bit. But, yeah, that team stinks. I mean, they're going to be last in the division and bottom feeding, you know.
Well, I think the thing is that I don't think Trubisky's not going to start this year. It's going to be Glennon.
Which makes it
so much weirder that it's like you drafted his replacement before he had played a game.
And he's going to lose throw, too.
Well, right, yeah. And the other thing for me is that I'd say, okay, even if you waited at three and took him at three, and you said he's the best player available, that's what you, but you traded all that stuff to move up to get him, where it's like, what the hell are you telling Glennon that, like, not only do you suck enough, we're drafting your replacement, but we're giving up a shitload in the future just to get this one guy that's going to replace you next year?
Poor Mike Glennon.
He's gonna be really bad.
Like a mentor type of guy. He's kind of a lifelong backer.
Right. Clipboard holder. Right?
Yeah. It's lunacy. Anyways, next on my list is Browns, and you had the Browns second to last.
No, I changed them there. I had the Rams second to last.
Oh, okay.
Because I think they suck. They're not gonna be good.
Yeah, so
kind of the same situation between the Rams
and the Niners.
And that's kind of they're 4-5 for me. Rams, I mean, we were talking about this before the podcast started. Imagine the Celtics made the Brooklyn trade and then totally blew it.
Yeah.
And that's the Rams.
Yeah, that's the Rams.
The only thing they got out of that was Aaron Donald.
Right, which is great.
Right.
But, like, nobody else even plays for them
anymore. $20 million a year to lose.
They had nine draft picks. Nine.
Yeah.
And I think
Redskins won that trade.
Was it like three? How many of them were in the top 10? Like three or four of them were in the top 10, right?
Yeah.
And they got.
I've been top five, too.
Donuts. Nothing. Yeah. I think Donald was number three overall.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
Then their tackle, Robinson, they just cut, was number two overall. And it's like, how do you miss on the number? So the fucking Rams.
Did you see the video of Jeff Fisher announcing to his coaching staff that he was fired?
I'm not going to go with the USA because
he's like throws his chair back with his hand behind his head.
Yep.
I mean, well, the thing is that for those guys, they're upset for him, obviously, but as an assistant coach, your mind goes to,
think,
holy shit, now I'm playing. You know what I mean? Because you're not sticking around anymore, you know? So not only is he fired, but now I'm probably fired.
Poor Jared Goff, man. I mean, I think he might be decent in the right system, but he's going to get his head taken off.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got literally nothing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they're not. I personally think he sucks. But, I mean, he could have been maybe a little bit better. But, I mean, when the reports started coming out in training camp that he wasn't getting the offense, and I was like, oh, boy, here we go. This is going to be ugly. So that was bad. So that's the Rams. And, again, I think our bottom 10 is kind of the same, so maybe we won't even list them all. Maybe we'll just kind of, right? So I think Browns are on there.
Yeah.
I think the Browns are on the rise.
Yeah. I have them, I think, 28.
Okay.
So
like fifth, I think
that they're just gonna get better. They had a good draft.
Yeah, it's weird to say that the Browns are doing some good things.
Yeah, they are.
You know, they really are. I mean, they
still suck. But
and they home run it with Myles Garrett. That guy's a freak.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
You know.
Then they got Peppers.
Yep.
Late in when they traded back with Kansas City, when Kansas City moved up to get a quarterback, they traded back to 25, picked up an extra first round pick next year.
Which is what they need. They need assets.
And they traded back into the first round to get, was it Njoku? Didn't they draft Njoku too?
The tight end. Yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, shit, you're right. They're doing big things and they're on the rise. Their quarterback's still below.
Yeah.
And so they're still going to suck, but they're at least they're moving in the right direction.
They added to their offensive line, which is big for them too, though.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because they're going to have to run the ball a ton because their quarterback's right. going to be awful.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Kaiser's going to be anything special.
Right.
You know, they took him second overall, but you know they're getting it together.
Jimmy G. Jimmy G's in the Cleveland's quarterback,
especially in that division
could
too.
Be.
Everyone's going down in that division.
Yes.
Well, they're getting old.
Yeah.
You know, the Ravens and the Steelers are...
They're not the same as they were.
No. I mean, Ben's got, what, 2-3 years left. Flacco has nobody. So they're primed to, you know, ride this wave a little bit and hopefully come out on the other side.
AFC North, I got 3 AFC North teams in my bottom 10.
Wow.
3.
Really?
So I'm pretty. If you want to say I'm down on the AFC North,
I'm
pretty down on the AFC North. Okay.
So,
So I think next for me. So we covered, I think, the bottom five here. Next for me is the Bills, and I just wrote they're the Bills. I mean, like, I don't think there's any more explanation needed. They're just the Bills. They suck.
They got the big boys up front, but not much else.
Yeah, they're just the Bills. They're just not good.
They're on the upswing, and then the whole Tyrod Taylor thing.
It's just a mess. Yeah. It's a mess. And maybe they'll turn it around, but again, they're the Bills.
Yes.
So I don't think there's much chance of that. So sorry, Bills fans, but you know, at least you have good parties and stuff, you know? I mean, I don't know if you consider a good party being like getting drunk and jumping into a burning table, but I guess the Bills do. So anyways. next on my list is the Jaguars, which again I think is on both of your lists as well.
Yeah.
You know, again, another team getting better. Defensively, they're getting better. They draft Fournette, so they have like that bell cow running back. But
it's another team. I feel like we've been saying that for like 3 drafts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, like they added Jalen Ramsey, and they added Malik Jackson from the Broncos, and Julius Thomas. And
well, the kid they drafted Fowler last year tore his ACL in training camp, so he was done.
Right.
You know, so you start looking at it and saying, okay, well, maybe there was something there, but maybe the guys just can't play. I mean, Jalen Ramsey, they said, I think Pro Football Focus had him as like a top 10 corner of the league last year. So,
he's freaked out.
You know, so they're getting better, but it's like they're only good at certain positions. Yeah. Their O-line kind of sucked, and so they've kind of shuffled some guys around. They draft Fournette, so we'll see what happens. I mean, but again.
They had some weapons for Bortles, too.
They did.
You know? Well, yeah, this is a big year for him, really.
Yeah.
But Doug Marrone.
Not good. former Bills coach. Although, I mean, you can say that about a lot of people. They're former Bills coaches, but nevertheless.
And they have that movie villain of an owner, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, but they do have
Sean
Coughlin back there now, though. They have
Coughlin
back,
Coughlin,
to me, he knows how to, you know.
It'll be interesting to see how he handles a rebuild.
And I do think Fournette's going to be a good pro running back, too.
Right.
You know, I mean, he's not the fastest guy, but he just bowls people over. And I think he's NFL ready, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, that's, you know. They were college teams, basically, like, calling pro teams, like, hey, you got any guys you want to send down so we can, like, we can, like, stop this guy this week, you know, because he's, like, he's a man, you know? And so we'll see how he does in the NFL against other men and not against the boys like he was in college. So we'll see what happens, you know?
Yeah.
Next on my list is the Bengals. And, again, I don't know if either of you guys are
the Bengals,
but...
Yeah, I think they're on a major downswing.
Listen,
my
question is this the year?
No.
Do we finally see Marvin Lewis get fired?
Oh, probably
not. Like,
no,
Jesus Christ.
It's not, he must have, like, naked pictures of that on his wife. Like,
I mean, maybe naked pictures of the owner. I mean, like, Jesus Christ, you know? Like,
but how that guy doesn't get fired. And, I mean, they lost 2 starters in the offensive line. Running game stinks. Other than A.J. Green...
They got nothing.
They got nothing. I mean, they have Eifert, but I don't think he's...
Well, they drafted another receiver in the first... I mean, they're just, like, they're just stupid.
But it's still...
They drafted Joe Mixon, and Mixon, I mean, you know,
the
Mixon...
The most Bengals pick of all time.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
But
right.
Supposedly, I mean, he could have been a great player, and supposedly he's turned the page. That happened a long time ago, and he was a freshman, I think, when it happened. So, you know, maybe he's turned around, and she released a statement with him saying, you know, forgive him, but I mean, I'm sure he gave her a little bit of money for that, but either way, you know,
say,
but like,
a little bit of that pro money, right?
You know, but even still, I mean, maybe he's turned the corner.
Draft,
probably
like,
not,
notebook
but.
Is just like police reports. It's just like,
well,
rap
it's like,
sheets of
it's
guys.
Like they, it's like they do what the Patriots do, which is target questionable guys, except typically the Patriots go after weed guys. And they go after, like, abusive guys. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
Well, that guy is a lot of aggression. Maybe if we turn that into football wise, it'd be great. And it's like, that's just a bad way to go. But anyways, so I have the Bengals on there again. I do have the Bengals, I think, already, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
And so you don't, Mike, but that's okay.
I'll probably have them next week.
So yeah, well, I would say they're probably right there. And then I got the Saints on there. I think Breeze is dropping. He just lost his best target in Brandon Cooks, who plays for the Patriots now.
Yeah.
And, you know, they signed Adrian Peterson.
He won't last the season for
a
him.
Glorified fullback.
Nobody gives a shit.
I mean, his biggest thing was his initial burst, and
it's gone.
You know, scouts are saying that's gone. So he's a fullback. He can't run, and he can't catch it out of the backfield, which is what Breeze loves. He loves those Darren Sproles types of guys, and he doesn't have that right now. I mean, he's got, what, Travis Cadet?
Right, but that's it.
Right, Ingram's still on the team, but, you know, they'll probably be a 5-6 win team. Their defense still blows.
Yeah, well, that's the other part, right?
Has never improved, and I don't understand why they don't even try to address it.
Although they drafted Lattimore at 11, which is big for them, and so if he comes out and plays well, absolutely, at 11, I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, he's projected to go top 5, so good for them getting him, but, I mean, even still, I think...
Yeah, years away.
Yeah, so... and then last on my list is the Ravens. We'll just maybe you guys add yours in after this. Last on my bottom 10 is the Ravens. They're just old at pretty much every position. They have tons of wide receiver issues that they've done nothing to resolve. You know, Flacco's getting older. Their line's getting older. They're just not that good anymore.
They lost that aura about them.
Right, and so the Ravens are on my list again. Again, that's three AFC North teams for you guys to keep in track at home. The AFC North is going to blow this year, which is going to allow the Steelers to win, I would say, 12 games easy, because they're going to beat up on the rest of the AFC North, like the Patriots usually do against the East. So, again, two AFC East teams in there, too. So, I mean, you know, who are your other teams in there, Mike?
I got the Chargers.
Yep, they suck. They're next week. They're coming next week because they're terrible.
I love their draft, though.
They had a great draft, right. Yeah. But, again, it's like...
Rivers is
they just have
on the
too many,
nine,
right? They have too many concerns there, and but you know it's possible if those guys come in and contribute right away, you could be looking at a better team than bottom 10. They're not making the playoffs, but they might not be a bottom 10 team this year. You know?
I think they're gonna be one of those pesky teams that you know sneaks out 7 wins and plays teams tough. But I mean they're in the bottom half of the league.
Well, they were
and
last
the
year.
Move too. I think kind of
moved to that old. I mean, they go play in the Coliseum now.
True.
No, they have to play in the soccer stadium.
Oh, they're right there in the soccer stadium. Yeah. That's right.
30,000 people.
And they can't sell it out.
The intimate experience.
They haven't been able to sell it out.
Stupid.
It's embarrassing.
But it's an intimate experience.
Oh, screw them, dude. And then we had
I think the only team we didn't talk about.
The Colts and the Eagles?
Colts and the Eagles,
I have the Colts.
Yeah.
I think the Colts stink.
The Colts
Me too.
I do. I guess hot take, I think Andrew Luck is the most overrated player in the NFL. He turns the ball over.
Love
he's
it.
Never,
Way
too he's
much.
Never developed fully.
No,
I feel like.
Well, and I think part of that is because he has the offensive scheme is just stupid.
Yeah.
It's just stupid. If they ran the Patriots offensive scheme, which is 3-step dropping out, he'd be able to do something. He takes like a 5 to 7 step
and
drop and gets murdered on every
no
freaking
line.
Play.
Yeah,
and it's like, what
the hell?
And
he has no running
hell,
game
dude?
To lean on.
Right. It's just, it's stupid. And so last year they drafted a center in the first round who had a pretty good year last year. If he improves, then maybe. You know, they start building the old line maybe a little bit. But, you know, the Colts just suck. I mean, like...
Their defense
they're
awful.
They from the coach.
Well, the way they addressed their running back and wide receiver situation was to sign Frank Gore and Andre Johnson, which is like, what are you doing? Like,
I know.
Just stop it, you idiots. So you're supposed to be getting younger, not getting older.
Right.
But that's the way they go.
Right.
The Eagles... I'm going to have to go disagree with you on this one.
Likewise.
I just think...
Really?
I'm all in
on the Wentz wagon, baby.
Yeah, I think Carson Wentz, dude, you know?
I think he's a real deal. I think they put some pieces around him. That defense is okay enough to keep him in games, but I think that's going to be a real good offense.
I have to say, some of your Redskins bias might be coming out here against
the
Eagles.
Well, I didn't put the Cowboys at 32, so it wasn't that bad.
Well, we're not that bad, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... Sorry to do this to you, Mike, but I got the Redskins in my bottom 10. I think that team's going to... I know you do. I think that team's going to be real bad. Defense is okay. I mean, they got Norman. They got a good front seven. But, I mean, they got Fat Rob as their running back. They have, Terrell Pryor, who's more of an athlete than a receiver. You know, Jordan Reed, if he's healthy. But, I think Cousins is halfway to San Francisco at this point to go with this guy Shanahan. And then just looking at their schedule, I mean, their bye week's in week 5, which is always tough. They start pretty easy, and they start with the Eagles, the Rams, but then it's they get the Raiders, the Chiefs, Eagles, Cowboys, Seahawks, Vikings, and then at New Orleans.
Yeah, they have a ton of night games.
Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they have two night games in their first 4 weeks.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I could see them losing 10 games. Yeah. I really could. I mean,
Let's hope for Mike's sanity and for the success of the podcast.
You, but
I'm thinking positive. Like, that tie really screwed them last year.
It did. It did. Yeah.
Stupid.
They would have been in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's move on here because we're running out of time here. Yeah. We're actually a little bit over time, but that's okay. We're having a good conversation, and if you don't like it, well, then go screw. I mean,
yeah,
that's
we'll
pretty much.
To
don't have
else.
To listen. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but let's go to this week in sports history. I think there's a lot of them this week. Mm. Today, 15 years ago today, we lost Ted Williams.
And his head.
Yes, yeah. And his head. They were separated and then cryogenically frozen, for those
yeah.
of you who don't know.
And it broke.
It did.
It did break. Yeah. Oh, my Lord.
Is he with Walt
imagine?
Disney somewhere?
Maybe.
Isn't Disney frozen under?
Disney
that,
is
that,
frozen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His kid's there. I know that.
That's yeah,
scary.
It's
yeah.
just
yeah.
what a fucking weird situation.
But about Ted Williams, if you make a Mount Rushmore of Boston sports, he's a Red Sox guy.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not David Ortiz.
Yeah. I mean... The problem
I
is
think maybe more Pedro than Ortiz.
Well, here's the problem with Ted Williams, okay? And as
win.
Much that's the problem,
it's different,
right?
Then.
And it is different. It's very different back then.
Yeah.
But again, Ortiz 3 rings, Williams 0, right? Now Ted Williams, greatest hitter of all time. You know, he gave up tons of prime years to fight in World War II
mm-hmm.
and Korea, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he fought in those wars, he wasn't just there.
Yeah,
you know,
he
fought in those
taking
wars.
Taking pictures.
Right. And yeah. so, you know, I mean, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know. That's a different discussion for a different day. But
well, we should do that next week. Mount Rushmore in Boston sports.
I like that. Holy shit, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, anyway, so let's.
Something fired up now.
So let's move on. Listen, I can.
You're wrong.
That's okay. Because I can see Ted Williams and I.
Yeah.
Anyways, we'll give it to you and just move on.
If anything, so, Mount Rushmore with Ted Williams would be perfect because it would just be his head.
Good point.
So that would work perfect.
Touché, salesman.
Already halfway there.
That's
yeah.
good. I like that. All right.
I'm sold.
So,
American hero.
You want to do the next one? Right.
Yeah, sure. July 6th, 1989, Mike Schmidt was elected to start in the All-Star game. Now, why that's weird, I mean, Schmidt was a Hall of Famer. He's unbelievable. Why that's weird is he retired on May 29th of the same year. So he had been retired for about 8 weeks, and he got picked to start the All-Star game.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Fantastic. You got to do the Redskins one, Mike.
Where is that? Oh, July 9th, 1932. What is that? Is that 75 years?
That is... No, yeah. That's 85
years. 85, all right. My beloved Washington Redskins formed... Right here in Boston, in West Roxbury, is the Boston Braves.
Yep, moved as the Redskins. So,
mm-hmm. yep.
I feel like the Boston Braves.
Park.
Boston Braves, a lot less controversial name, still offensive,
yeah.
I think. But you know, whatever.
What?
Anyways, I'm just rattling. I'm just all in his head now. And then the last one for the week, July 6th, 1990. Andy Hawkins, the most unlucky pitcher of all time.
Yeah.
Pitched for the Yankees. He already in the 1990 season had pitched a no-hitter for a loss somehow. I mean, it's possible. It's happened a few times, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
He pitched a no-hitter for a loss. And then on July 6, 1990, he pitched a 12-inning complete game and lost.
Which would never happen. Now,
just,
way.
Oh, of course not.
No, no
Can
way.
You imagine
I mean,
pitching 12 innings now?
Oh, Lord. That would be unbelievable.
That's like 3 starts to pitch 12 innings.
Yes, that does. Some of it. Unbelievable. So anyway, so that's this week in sports history. For the Warrior one to watch, for this week, it kind of already started, but anyways, we'll go with it. Tour de France is going on right now. Wimbledon going on right now. Oh, also I forgot to remind you, we fucking nailed it again. We just nailed it every week with this
every
Warrior
week.
One to watch, dude. CFL update for you. Last week we told you to watch CFL Calgary against
Ottawa. Red Blacks.
It was a rematch of the Grey Cup last year.
Now that's an offensive name.
Yeah. Stop it. Anyways, it's Canada. Nobody cares, okay? They're all too nice in Canada.
We'll edit that out.
So, too late. See, now you mentioned it. Mm. See, this is what I learned last time. When you mention the edit, then it's in. That's nothing you can do, because then we got to edit out the edit. Yeah, okay. Now we're all screwed up. All
right.
Okay, anyways, the CFL, okay, rematch of the Grey Cup, Calgary with revenge, 43-39, barn burner of a game. Mm-hmm. And
is
so,
that our team, Calgary? Is that our team that we're going to pick? Like our follow? Like,
that's it.
We're going to follow?
Let's
like
do it. Let's
that.
Do it. The Calgary. I'm in there. I'm in there like swimming.
That's right.
Well, I would be remiss this week in sports history. July 2nd, Bret Hart turned 60 years old, which makes me feel
6-0. Mm-hmm. Here you go, son.
God, that guy was my hero.
Big 6-0.
Best wrestling book. Actually, the best book I've ever read.
Really?
It's Bret Hart's autobiography.
Huh.
Interesting.
My sister Lisa, which, hi Lisa, if you're listening, latched onto his back outside of the Worcester Centrum and piggybacked him to his car from the entrance.
Awesome. What?
Yeah, so we used to always.
How have I never heard this story before?
So we used to go to all the matches. I'll tell this really quick if I can. So we used to go to all the matches back in the day. Went to the Worcester Centrum, and it was one of those shows where they taped like 5 weeks of television, so you were there all day.
Yeah.
Like guys would come out like four times just in different outfits.
That's awesome.
And so I was afraid of The Undertaker. So me and my mom, God bless her heart, we went back to the car and just like kind of sat there and waited, and I was eating my ice cream or whatever because I was fat. And we started seeing, you know, once the wrestlers were done, they were leaving and we were the only ones outside. So we started meeting all these guys, like including The Undertaker, and he was super nice. And I met Tatanka, who was the fake Indian guy.
I met him, yeah.
He might have actually a real Indian guy. But anyways, so all these guys come out, and then once the show is over, Lisa and my dad come out, and we see Bret Hart leaving, and Lisa bolts for him because she had the biggest crush on him ever, and didn't say hi, nothing, just jumped on his back like it was like they had been separated for months, and it was her his daughter, and literally rode him to his car. Then finally he was like, all right, I gotta get in my car now. And yeah, I'll never forget that night. But yeah, Bret the Hitman Hart gave my sister a piggyback ride for about 30 yards.
For those of you that don't know Lisa,
that's very much
is
like Lisa.
Incredibly believable.
Oh yeah. Yes. Right.
Yep.
Right.
So when you meet her, you'd be like, oh, that makes sense that she rode Bret the Hitman Hart for, that sounds dirty now that I'm saying it, but yeah, but you know what I mean. Yeah. You know, you got what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So, yes, Warrior wanted to watch Tour de France and Wimbledon. Chances are there's going to be something unbelievable happen during the Tour de France or Wimbledon. Mm. Hopefully it won't be a crazy cheating scandal like back in the day with Lance Armstrong. But, you know, I mean, if it is, then we nailed it again, right? What can't we do right?
The Stampeders are at Winnipeg this week.
Oh, Stampeders, Winnipeg.
Yeah, I think they're the Blue Bombers.
Oh, the good old Blue Bombers. Not to be confused with the Blue Bombers. Oh, that's just a high school football team around here. I think it used to be Attleboro. Not anymore, but it used to be Attleboro. My wife teaches at Attleboro High, in case anyone didn't know that. So, anyways, that's it for this week. Next week, more football, possibly more Red Sox, maybe if they keep winning. Oh, no, next week's the All-Star break. Whatever, dude. We're not talking baseball.
Sorry, Red Sox.
One more Warrior One to watch. Home Run Derby on Monday night, right? Monday night?
Yeah.
Monday night Home Run Derby.
It's
fun.
I don't like the new rules, but I'll still watch it.
Yeah.
I like the 10 outs.
Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, that could take forever, you know. But, yeah, it's always a blast. I mean, chicks dig the long ball.
No,
so don't I. Like, it's just fun to watch a guy mash a ball 500 feet.
It is. It's true.
You know.
It's true. So that's fun. Monday night. Check that one out. ESPN, I believe. So, anyways, that's that. So, and maybe we'll do a Boston sports Mount Rushmore like that.
Yes.
Pick one guy from each team.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's going to be terrible.
It'll be fun.
But anyways, I mean, terrible in a good way. I mean, I don't know who we're going to pick, but nevertheless, that's what we got next week. Again, check us out on Twitter or email us. It's at Weekend War Pod. So weekend, no E's. So WKNDWARPOD. And our email is the same, WKNDWARPOD@gmail.com. All right, check us out there, and we will see you next week.